In this session, we're going to be exploring a little more in the physical aspects of time travel. In the introductory material in session one and session two of the program, we were really exploring how we thought about time and space and what it meant to travel through time and space. And I brought into focus some of the ideas about what ancient spiritual practitioners of time travel actually did. And we even did some processes at the end of each session in which you got a chance to play along the timeline. The timeline which in the immediate to your left is the past, in your immediate to the right is the future, and right in the center is your so-called now point. And we looked at that, and we looked at what are the things that we do that tell us that we are in time. And I brought out the idea that what we do to tell us that we're in time is sense rhythm, vibration. And what I was hinting at here, and what we're going to be getting into in later sessions, but just so that you have an idea as to where we're going, that there is something within you that's not only internal, but also eternal sense of vibration or rhythm. I call it the river of time. And every one of us, each one of us has this river of time within it. We can call it a different name. We can call it the mind of God, if you will. We can call it what I call the river of time. We can call it the egoless mind, the floating mind. I use that terminology as well. I wanted to give you that as an introduction in the first two sessions because I wanted to prepare you now for how physicists and scientists have objectified or put into view a way of understanding that subjective sense of time that we have built in with us in a new way, in the way that previous to the turn of the 20th century had been completely thought impossible. And this is what we call the physical view of time and space. One anonymous quote says, "Time is the quality of nature which keeps events from happening all at once, but lately it doesn't seem to be working." Maybe our lives are so hectic right now that we feel that too many things are happening at once. My wife and I talk about this sort of thing all the time, and she says, "Fred, you're not very good at multitasking." And I said, what does that mean, multitasking? Well, that's when you're doing two or three things at the same time. Apparently, in the workplace today, we have multitaskers. And I don't know how you can do that. I can barely do one thing at one time. But gosh, there are people that do several things at the same time and seemingly with equal facility, without any difficulty doing that. So before we then get into and explain how a new way of thinking, which we call relativity theory, and I'm going to actually teach you that to you without using anything more than your minds and your ability to maybe draw a line on a sheet of paper, no more math than that, I'm going to teach that to you. But before I teach that to you, I want to give you a kind of an overview, a look at what we mean by time and space from the objective or physical point of view. So, I mentioned this earlier, and I'll mention it again. Because time and space are really all around us all of the time, we can't even talk about time and space without using some kind of metaphor. And it's very difficult. Stop yourself for a moment and think about what you mean by time, how you use the concept of time. For example, I don't know, maybe you drive from your home to the nearest grocery store. I mean, I don't know where you go to. Or maybe you have to drive to get to work early in the morning. Maybe you're doing that right now while you're listening to this. And your sense of how far you go, if I ask you, how many miles do you drive? You probably wouldn't know that. You may, but you may not. But if I ask you, how far you go, you would probably answer, well, it takes me about 45 minutes. In other words, you would answer me about how far you're going in terms of how long it takes you to drive, given that you drive this every day, and what's important to you is actually the time it takes for you to get from home to work. So we already are using this different kind of metaphor. We're using the metaphor of space to talk about time, or vice versa. So I want to point out to you that it's really difficult to say exactly what time is. There was a Saint Augustine, I think, from Hippo. He lived in the late 4th and early 5th centuries. And he was a scholar, and he wrote about a lot of stuff. He wrote about, what then is time? If no one asks me, I know what it is. But if I wish to explain it to him who asks me, I don't know. Think about that for a moment. Perhaps he was referring to how difficult it is to reconcile our common, normal, subjective sense of time, that's this river of time that we all feel, with our objective, now mathematical, description of time. Or perhaps the saint from Hippo was just jumping into the future and talking about that peculiar quantum physics paradox, which I'm going to be telling you more about a little later, called the complementarity principle, which says, from a psychological point of view, you cannot really say or express what you have to say without changing what you have to say. You can't express knowledge without altering it. It's this principle of probability that it's probably safe to say that no one can really articulate what time is simply because we have really nothing else to compare it with, although we certainly try to find metaphors for it. And it just seems to elude us as we struggle with that. And it turns out, as we're going to see shortly, that when Albert Einstein entered onto this arena, that began to change. Not only did we metaphorize time as space, but it actually became a physically significant thing to do, not just a metaphorical thing to do. It became, in a sense, a reality. And this reality, that time and space could be possibly interchangeable, is going to lead us into physical devices for time travel. And this is where I think things can get very interesting.